Drive into summer savings at Burt Brothers Tire and Service with unbeatable discounts on complete car care services like free alignment checks, $20 off any Valvoline oil change, $20 AC checks, and $25 off any service over $250. Burt Brothers Tire and Service.
Wake up! The games are over, and it's time for our guys to break it all down. After all, it's Sunday. What else do you have to do?
Nothing.
This is your Morning After podcast with Hanson, Scotty, and Lloyd Cole on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Sunday morning, everybody. It's another edition of the Morning After podcast, and boy, do we have some stuff to talk about. BYU gets the win. Utah gets the win. Utah State does not get the win, but may have found their future quarterback, and we may even touch on a crazy game in Boulder with Colorado and Colorado State. But first, let's go to lovely Arkansas, shall we? Hans Olsen joining us from his hotel room. Hans, how are you, my friend?
Well, finally got a couple hours of sleep. I am really still dizzy. I don't know where I'm at exactly. That game went forever. The post game was kind of long and extended, but man alive, the energy that was coming out of that game and that stadium, that's about as fun of a venue and a moment that I've been a part of.
All right, so let's get to it. You're out of the gate, 14-0, bam, bam, just like that. I was talking to our boss, Nate Dowdle, and he and I were both like, what is going on? Come on, BYU, you got to help us out here a little bit. We got a long football season. You can't lay an egg in Arkansas. And before you know it, it's 21-14, and BYU withstands the haymaker. And, of course, Arkansas would throw a couple more. But what were your thoughts when they were down 14-0 right out of the gate?
It's that classic game that you take three. It was three plays that led to them being up 14-0. And during the broadcast, I said, I'm not worried. Like, this is not the worry point, because you can sit in a huddle and look at each other and say, it's three plays. You take those three plays, the punt return for a touchdown, the big breaking run that got past a safety that BYU made some changes at safety right after that. They're like, no, we're not going to mess with this. And you take away those three plays and you're back to square one. So you can calm your nerves and you can say, hey, we can get back into this. They're not driving methodically on us. They're not absolutely pounding us. We just have to try to get this momentum back in our direction. And they were able to do that and overcome a terrible start, but it was rough. It was rough to start for sure.
Lloyd, you were wrapped up the Utah post game at that point and watching this thing as well. Were you thinking BYU was in trouble?
Yeah, definitely.
I'm not going to lie. Hans is better than, Hans knows the game better than you and I. And I was thinking, oh boy, we're in for a long day here.
My first reaction, right when they scored that first touchdown, I was like, I even tweeted, I said, SEC speed. That was all I said, SEC speed. I was like, and in fact, I was sitting there watching it with Jay Catch there in the studio. And then all of a sudden they have the punt return where he gashes right up the middle. And he was gone, and I was like, I tweeted out, rinse and repeat. I was like, this game. Me and him looked at each other, and we both said, this game's over. There's no way they're not going to be able to keep up with this speed. And all of a sudden, you know, they got some stuff going, and Jay Hill's defense was, you know, I mean, they gave up points obviously, but that you could tell the difference. It changed the. You know, field, it changed the field advantage, you know, in favor of BYU at times. Like, his imprint on the game was noticeable.
Hans, there's so many different elements to talk about, but there was a lot of conversations earlier in the week about how LJ Martin was going to be the starting quarterback. And one of the things Aaron Roderick said was, well, the kid breaks tackles. He keeps plays alive. He doesn't go down with first contact. And you saw LJ on display in this game. And, you know, that first half performance he put on was really, really impressive. And this young man's got himself a bright future.
The first half was good. He had that big breakaway play that was really big for BYU. Get the momentum going. Get the BYU fans. There was probably 7,000 BYU fans in the stadium, be my guess.
They had a good corner, it looked like, a good corner attention of that stadium. I was like, well, that's a good showing.
Yeah, it was. It was a really good showing, and they got really loud. And LJ was really good, but it's still not as much rushing yards. It was the rushing carries. We talked about it. What do we want to see? Over 20, right? And he hit 23 or 24. So it was the carries, but the yards just weren't there consistently. I think that it'll continue to improve, but they felt like they could throw the ball again. Yeah, here's what's crazy, guys. So you got Keanu Hill back, and you got Cody Epps back. They do not log a single reception between the two of them.
Epps should have had one, but he dropped it.
Yeah, that was a bad drop.
Yeah, it was, you know, he threw it a little bit behind him, but you can't drop that. But, you know, he did.
But it's crazy. It's crazy to me to think that they came out of this thing with a win and neither one of those guys had a reception.
Yeah, yeah.
Parker Kingston was awesome. He had a receiving touchdown, and then he threw a touchdown on a throwback to Deion Smith. So that kind of reverse toss to Parker Kingston and Parker Kingston throwing all the way back across the field, that was another big momentum grab just in the first half to try to get things back in BYU's direction. It was the classic Aaron Roderick, man. He's got such a good feel for when he can get in there and do something dramatic. So that was a really big moment. And LJ is going to keep coming along. He had some good moments. I just think he just needs to continue to grow. He is the rightful owner of the starting position. It just needs, that run game needs to get better still.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, overall, you know, Slovis, you know, his yards are going to care, you know, obviously with sacks and things like that, that cuts down on yardage a bit, but you know, LJ Martin, 3.3 yards a carry. Smith, 2.5 yards a carry. Those are your running backs. Kingston had a carry, you know, and Epps from, you know, the wide receiver position. But, you know, overall, and Aiden Robbins, you know, look, I think we might be able to write him off now. I think he's certainly fallen out of favor with his coaching staff. But between Martin and Smith, you're looking at about 2.8 yards a carry. Certainly not going to get it done. And frankly, and I know it's never fair to do this because he still ran for it, but if you take LJ Martin's 45-yard run out of it, then things look quite a bit different. So it'll be another talking point that we'll spend the week talking about in terms of BYU's rushing attack. But I want to focus on Keaton Slovis a little bit because if you look at the numbers, they're not great. 13 to 25 for, you know, $167 and two touchdowns, but he didn't turn the ball over. And you know, he didn't make the big mistake out there. So if you're grading Keaton Slovis after this game, where are you putting him at?
Well, and like Lloyd said, there were a couple of drop passes. He did airmail a pass or two. Where am I putting Keaton? I would put Keaton on a pretty high pedestal coming out of this game because there were moments that you really needed his vision and you needed his touch. Did you guys see the two most incredible catches that I've seen so far this season?
Well,
Chase Roberts, yeah. I think, is number one on the ESPN.
And Isaac Rex.
Yep.
And then the Isaac Rex catch.
Yep.
Were those as good on the broadcast as they were in life?
Well, yes, yes. The Chase Roberts one in particular was ridiculous. And obviously, essentially the game-winning touchdown, too. I mean, the kid only had two catches for 12 yards, but none bigger than that touchdown to put him up 38-31. And you watch that thing over and over, and you're just like, that's just thing's a thing of beauty. But Isaac Rex was just a man. But, yeah, that one catch he had was ridiculous.
Let's just say everybody from the age of probably, I don't know, 18 to, we'll just say maybe 50, will be having that Chase Roberts as their catch, as their Avi, probably going forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was that amazing of a catch.
Yeah, it really was. It felt like that throw was so off that there's no way he's getting to it. And somehow he snagged that and pulled it out. And it wasn't just the catch. It was the critical moment of it.
So yeah, oh, yeah.
He said that, yeah. that was the winning catch.
Yeah. And, I mean, I need to go look. I got to go through and, you know, usually I'll rewatch the game and go through the play-by-play and look at everything a little bit more closer before we hop on the air. But I want to say that was, all right, second and goal. For some reason, I thought it was third and goal, but it was second and goal at the 7-yard line. So, I mean, they still had a couple more plays, but my goodness, to get to that point and to be able to throw that thing up where, you know, a field goal still gives you the lead, but you don't want to leave it to a field goal. You want Arkansas to have to press, which they did, and were unable to really generate much offense. On the next drive, they go 3 and out, BYU punts, and the next drive they go 3 and then end up with the fumble. And so you look at that, I mean, Arkansas just never could generate anything after that touchdown, and it just took the wind out of the sails of all those fans there in Arkansas.
So then it comes down to what Lloyd mentioned, the Jay Hill defense.
Oh, yeah.
And gentlemen, BYU produced actual one-on-one pressure. Tyler Batty with a big sack off a one-on-one beat, just a nice speed rush with an inside jab and a big sack. You had pressures from Banya. You had a Jackson Cravens pressure, a John Nelson pressure. You had an AJ Vompachong sack. It was a crazy mix because KJ Jefferson had the ball with about a minute 40 left to go down that field and get the tying touchdown. And he could not sit in the pocket for more than a second and a half, two seconds. And BYU was getting the pressures on him. So that was a big Jay Hill influence. And then, guys, Jay Hill made some great defensive moves, going two deeps, running some different press looks. Eddie Heckard was a man out there. Eddie Heckard had one of his best, his best game. His stat line was crazy. Forced fumble, sack. I think he had 6 tackles, 2 TFLs. Eddie Heckard's stat line was awesome. And they got pressure off of a 4-man rush, which, Scotty, you know, the end of that game, the only thing you can do is rush 4. And if you can't pressure by rushing those 4, you don't got a chance. And so I was a little bit nervous about that. I was like, I don't know if they're going to be able to pressure them. This thing might get tied up and we might have an overtime situation.
Well, and I almost,
maybe it was hot.
I almost texted you in the first half, Hans, because they weren't getting pressure with 4. And there was, you know, through the second quarter when both offenses were kind of mowing up and down the field a little bit. And I'm like, I thought about texting him, like, they're not getting pressure, Hans. This could be a problem. And then I'm glad I didn't, because, well, first off, I didn't want to bug you during the broadcast. And then during the third and fourth quarter, I'm watching, I'm like, oh, I'm glad I didn't send that text, because this team is absolutely getting there. And it's something that we just haven't seen from a BYU team in a really, really long time. And not just getting there, but getting there in pressure situations when you know you have to disrupt that quarterback and you got a super athletic dude dancing around the background and they were able to get it done.
I mean, when was the last time we saw 4 sacks in a game from a BYU defense? I mean, maybe it was against some sort of FCS opponent early in the season or something where they were able to do it, but I don't remember the last time. It's probably been a little bit.
I don't remember the last time.
I mean, that's been our big talking point. Was what did they have last year as a team? 15, something like that. 15 sacks.
13. I don't remember exactly what it was. 15. 13. Yeah, you're right.
Was it 15? It was 15 sacks.
I mean, they did not
got 4 in one game.
Actually, they did have 4 against Baylor last year. That surprised me.
That does.
You go to 2021. They had 4 in a game against Arizona, the opening game of the season. And they had five against Navy. That doesn't count. That Navy team was trash in 2020. But, yeah, it's been a minute for sure.
Okay, Scotty, we were pointing out that it happens, like, all the time. Okay.
Lloyd, I'm just trying. You asked the question. When was the last time they got four sacks?
Just kidding. It's early. It's early. I haven't had my coffee yet. I need to get. I didn't even have time to get coffee.
You know, Hans. So, you know what
I'm
this.
Sorry.
You know what this calls for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you put the sounder in later?
No, that's right there. Did you guys not hear it?
No.
There you go.
Well, here it is again. Lloyd, when you get the full mix, it'll be on there. Trust me.
There were so many amazing moments, you guys. The pressures were great. There was a fake field goal called, guys, that could have ended up being one of the most terrible, ridiculous moments in BYU football history. They snap it back. Rico gets it, stands up, starts rushing, and goes nowhere. And the fake field goal is stopped when they could have got a critical 3 points. And there was a flag near the back part of the end zone. The official threw the flag on a delay of game, which is a pre-snap penalty. So it erased the play. It bumped them back 5 yards, and they were able to kick the field goal and put the 3 points on. But it was nearly a failed fake field goal that lost a scoring opportunity, but it did lead to 3 points and got them in that position that they could tie it.
One of these days, they'll convert a fake. Hey, Lloyd, when's the last time they converted a fake field goal or a punt?
It's been years, probably, would be my guess. Probably has never happened. Go ahead, Scotty. Name about seven times that it's happened now in the last 2 years.
Well, actually, Oliva Hefo.
How many fake field goals can you fit in that RV? Oh, at least 40. Actually, no, just
at two. Least 40.
There were three times where Tyler Algier did it in a quarter.
Great.
Hey, we'll spend a ton of time tomorrow breaking this game down. You'll hear from Kalani Sitake. You'll also hear from Kyle Whittingham. All right, Lloyd, now's your time to shine. Utes with a, I don't know, do you say convincing win? Where are your thoughts on this one?
All right, you guys, back away from the mics. Let me go. It's time for me to cook.
This horse wants to run. Let's go.
This horse wants to run. Now, you know what? Like, it's the thing is, it was a, you know, it was funny. We started, me and Frank did that pregame, and I thought to myself, Utah's going to come out, and I thought they would come out and have their way. I thought it'd be like 55-10. I thought they'd dominate, and it was a slow start in the first half. When they had the first string offensive line in there, they were able to run the ball in that second half, but it was the defense. It was the story of the defense, and the offense didn't. I mean, they had 231 yards rushing, which I thought was. I mean, Nate Johnson had 71 yards rushing, but it was kind of deceptive. It didn't feel like they ran the ball quite that efficient. You know, Nate Johnson was 13 of 21, 193 yards and a touchdown, but it was just. It left more to be, and you know this, Hans. They don't, and Scotty, they don't want to give, you know, do a bunch of. They want to keep it vanilla against a team like Weber State, especially going into Pac-12 play, and it felt very vanilla. But I've got a feeling, by the way, I don't know if we're going to be seeing Cam Rising. I think he might be out a little bit longer than we're thinking.
Is that
Frank Dolce is kind of thinking kind of the same thing a little bit, but he's in his street clothes and I don't know when and watch him show up against UCLA and play, but I don't know. I don't think he's ready.
That's big. If that's true, because we've all been looking at UCLA and all summer long, UCLA season started, UCLA, it's going to be UCLA. That's when he's getting back. And if it's not UCLA, and no disrespect to Nate Johnson, he's done some good things and won you that Baylor game.
He's young. He's a redshirt freshman. He looked like a redshirt freshman, by the way.
But you could have some issues there, Hans, if he doesn't go in that game.
Oh, baby. Don't let that be an option. That is going to be a really tough game. And I'm actually a little bit shocked we didn't get to see him against Weber State. But like you were saying, Frank feels like it might be a little while.
Yeah, Frank's feeling like he was for sure thinking as we were in that pregame that we're not gonna see him. And then sure enough, he was in street clothes and we didn't see him. And you know, but the thing is, like, so you got UC, you open up Pac-12 play at home against UCLA, and UCLA they haven't really been tested. They haven't played anybody. You know, they. So that might be able to be one you can sneak out. But guess what? You still have coming up. If you don't get them back by Oregon State, I mean, there's a good chance you could be 0-2 in Pac-12 play pretty quickly. If like, I mean, you saw how that. I mean, and I know you've been Scotty. You watched that game. Like it didn't feel like that offense with Nate Johnson. Like there was no, they need Cam Rising.
Well,
like,
yeah.
They're not healthy. And Kyle Whittingham said in the post game that they've still got like 15 or 16 players that are waiting to get back. And it's like the team, I know that's what they really need to get it back, but that just, that offense just has no flow. Like it's, and I don't know if it's just cause they're keeping it super vanilla or what, but you would think you might see a little something from the offense. And it's just, it just wasn't there.
Well, and correct me if
I'm coming against the team that they scored 31 points.
Yeah. But
you know,
but
3-0 going into Pac-12, but play, but it's, I don't know. It just doesn't, but they're going to have to find figure something out.
But that offense only put up 24. 7 was on a pick six, correct?
Right. Yep. Lander Barton had a pick six. So, yes, 24 points.
So you put 24 offensive points up against Weber State, who, again, Weber State's a good team. Weber State, one of your better FCS teams. But it's an FCS team, and it's a team that you should beat fairly easily. And look, at no point in this game, Hans, did I ever feel like this game was ever in doubt, but it just never felt like Utah was ever, you know, Utah never really put the foot on the gas. And again, you got Lander Barton as the pick six, but other than that, that offense just kind of looked like they were stuck in mud most of the day.
It feels like one of those, it feels like one of those years that we've seen where Utah has, and trust me, they got playmakers on that offense.
Oh yeah,
but it needs Cam Rising is that gas that really makes it go. But it feels like it's one of those Utah teams that has that unbelievable defense, like a really good defense. But it's going to have that lackluster offense if it doesn't get their captain back.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll get tweets saying, "Hey, look, they had over 400 yards of offense, 231 yards on the ground." I mean, you can throw all the stats you want, but at the end of the day, you only had 24 offensive points. You know, how many coaches always come on the air and say, "We don't care how many yards we have; we care about points." And I don't know, man. I think that there's cause for concern here. This was your get right game, and I don't know how much Utah got right here.
Well, how did they divvy up the running when they kind of break down what they do with the running backs for me?
So Nate Johnson led the team with 71 yards. He had 16 carries, 71 yards and a touchdown. Jaquindon Jackson, 9 carries, 69 yards. Jalen Glover, 12 carries, 47. Chris Curry, 6 for 23. And then, you know,
you didn't see Chris Curry until the third quarter.
Yeah.
Like I was surprised. I thought you might see him a little bit earlier, but then, you didn't get him until the third quarter.
And then I'm not going to count Daniel Wood or Charlie Vincent and Joey Cheek. So your big guns, Jaquindon with 9, Glover with 12, Curry with 6. And the three of those combined went for, let's see, 70, about 139, 140 yards.
Well, I would criticize it, but that it's very, it's way better than what BYU did against Southern Utah.
Yeah. And that's, well, okay. And this is, Hans, you and I have this conversation all the time. I mean, we can nitpick like crazy because we have high expectations for them. I mean, that's why we hold teams to a higher standard, is that because we expect, if you're the 12th team in the country, you need to play better than that. You need to beat Weber State by more than that. And so that's why I think that we analyze, and I'm sure Utah fans are like, you've been really hard on these guys. Well, yeah, because we expect more from them. We expect this team to challenge for a Pac-12 championship team. Yeah. You're a two-time defending champ. You know, your own coach said, this is the most talented team I've ever had here at the University of Utah. And look, there's murmurings of a college football playoff team, but two things are going to have to happen for that to happen. Number one, you got to get right at quarterback. And number two, the offense has got to perform better. And those two are probably related. When Cam Rising comes back, this offense probably takes another step. If Dalton Kincaid came back, that'd be great. When Brant Keithy comes back, this offense will take another step. So, I know they're injury related, but still, like, I understand if Utah fans are getting a little antsy about what they've seen over the last couple of games.
And by the way, Brant Keithy could very well be out further than Cam Rising.
Jeez, Lloyd, you're a little ray of sunshine today, man.
I know. I'm just saying. It's just like there's just, I don't know. There's he could be a ways out. But they put, I mean, they put the thing is they put maybe this is their get right game where they said, let's get some players healthy. I mean, they put out this injury, graphic on the game that said, all these players was going to be out. Cam Rising, Brant Keithy, Johnny Maea, Connor O'Toole, Travis Broughton, Junior Tafuna, who came back against Baylor but sat out this one. You had Cole Becker, the kicker, who missed the game with an injury. And Devon Vele also missed. So you had there's a couple of new names that was on there that you didn't expect to be on there.
I'm just not worried about it at all. After what I saw BYU do against Southern Utah and Sammy Houston, and then beating an SEC team on their field and looking like they belonged and having a defense really look like they belong, I imagine Utah's going to be getting to work for UCLA, and we're just going to see a full gambit. You got to press him back a little bit. I'm just bummed about the Cam Rising news, if that is the case, if he's out for another extended period of time. But
so you're not worried if Cam's not back, you're still not worried about UCLA?
And by the way, nothing reported on Cam. It's just that's just like a gut feeling.
Lloyd's got a gut feeling.
Yeah,
and watch that gut feeling be completely wrong. So
you just got a little Rodney Hood gastric distress.
It's happened before.
Hans may have had that right before we hopped on the air or hopped on this podcast.
Hey, Hans, you know this game. I trust your feelings on this. Hey, I joked about you had a strong feeling. You guys had a good strong feeling about this BYU going into Arkansas. I wasn't quite seeing that exactly. And guess what? They did. They went in to Arkansas and picked up a win on the road. So I trust your feelings on this type of stuff better than I would myself.
I think that UCLA is going to be a heck of a match for him. But you've got that freshman Dante Moore who's been leading the pack there. They've pushed most of the carries to Anthony Adkins. He's doing okay. I don't know who they just played. I think it was at NCCU. I can't remember.
Carolina Coast Central or something like that.
Yeah, some stupid garbage team. But I don't – like, I'm not impressed by the San Diego State win. I'm not impressed by the Coastal – they beat Coastal Carolina 27-13. They beat San Diego 35-10. I'm not impressed. I can't remember what the score was of the NC Central thing, but I think it was a pretty good whooping. I am not impressed by UCLA at this point. And we'll do our film study, and we'll jump into it on a daily basis on the show. And as the week kind of progresses, I'll have more and more take on it. But, yeah, Scotty, even without Cam Rising out there, I think there's some Nate Johnson stuff that you can do to possibly get this thing rolling. I do need to fully admit, as you guys know, I just busy with pregame and stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I am going to be watching I'm going to be watching the game today and so I can give a little bit better take. I'm not overly worried with it. With what I saw against Baylor and Florida, I think you're going to be able to hold up against UCLA.
I'll be interested to see your film study, because the feeling I got, you know, from Nate Johnson was just, it didn't feel like he went through a lot of his reads. Like he was quick to tuck it and run it. And I have, like I said, you're going against Weber State, and no disrespect to Weber State, but I got to imagine you're getting some guys open. And they found, you know, they actually had Maneer McLean had a really nice game, three catches for like 92 yards. Like he had a nice game in the absence of Devon Vele. I would be interested to see, you know, what exactly you saw with Nate Johnson.
By the way, we should probably back up a little bit and talk a little bit more. Well, not talk. We're not going to spend a ton of time on the game, but just recognize the fact that Florida just beat the pants off of Tennessee. And so that Florida win started to look a lot better. I mean, they were up 26-7 at halftime, win that game 29-16, and Tennessee was 11th in the country going into that game. And so Florida might be a better team, and Utah beat them with their JV team. So, you know, who's to say they can't beat UCLA with their JV team as well? So, you know, there you go.
A lousy Florida team, as I hear.
Yeah.
Lloyd.
Wait, you know, that guy was getting,
wait, wait, what guy are you
was
doing, man?
Badgered. You know that guy was getting badgered last night, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
He was getting badgered last night. It was funny.
Oh, boy. Hans, you and I talked a little bit about this yesterday. The Utah State Air Force game is on Friday, and I was in Colorado Springs calling that one. Utah State got roughed up pretty good. They're down 22-0 right out of the gate. To me, the storyline in that game, well, there was a couple things. That Utah State defense just got mauled, and all Air Force did was run dive, 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 dive. They didn't even need to run pitch. They didn't need to go crazy with a triple option. They just ran fullback dive, and Utah State couldn't stop it. They got manhandled the line of scrimmage about as bad as anything I've seen in a while. They're down 22-0 right out of the gate and end up losing that game 39-21. The story in this game, though, going forward that I think is going to be fascinating, and I would anticipate that Blake Anderson will make an announcement on Monday. He'll certainly talk to us on Tuesday when he comes on for his weekly conversation. But if people have been listening closely, if you're a Utah State fan, you've been listening closely to the show, I've been hinting at the fact that the McKay-Hillstead era was very close to beginning in Logan. Cooper Legault, love the kid. He's done a lot of great things for Utah State, but just had not made the progression that he needed to from last year, taking over the last seven games as a starter, and coming into this year. Just happy feet. Not quick decisions, not getting the ball off in time, making poor decisions with where he's going with the ball. And he had a miserable night that first quarter. Had a fumble at his own 11 when he held onto the ball too long that gave Air Force a short field. They turned that into a touchdown, went up by two scores. And then the one drive he got going, had made two nice throws, and then just stared down a receiver and threw a really bad interception. And after that, he goes to the sideline, and I'm looking at Blake Anderson, and I know it's like, oh, that kid's done. You can tell with the language on the sideline and the body language, and he does not go to Levi Williams. He goes to McKay-Hillstead. And while Utah State lost that game, hands for a kid that was playing for Sky Ridge High School just last year, he came in, and he played really well. Now, the defense still couldn't get stops and really couldn't, you know, give the offense opportunities to get them back in the game. But he throws for three touchdowns, over 220 yards. Air Force realizes he's a true freshman. They're throwing all kinds of crazy corner blitzes, and he takes a couple sacks. And there were some things that he wasn't ready for. But I think this kid's got a really bright future. I've talked a lot about how the coaching staff has fallen in love with him. They think he's the future. And I would imagine afterwards on our postgame show, Blake Anderson said that he's going to take the weekend, look at the film, and then make a decision. But there's no decision. It's going to happen. McKay Hillstead's going to be named your starter on Monday. And it'll be interesting. There's a kid from your neck of the woods, Hans, that's probably on his way to doing some really good things.
Yeah, he's such a good kid. Such a good kid, and comes from a great family, and obviously he has state championships to show at his time in high school, well coached. So he's poised. He's ready to take on that kind of role. I'm just curious, how many years of eligibility does Cooper have left? Because I'm just wondering, does he jump in the portal now?
I think he's done. He might. I need to look back on this. He's listed as a senior. I know he was there for the 2019, 20, 21, 22, 23. This is his fifth year. I just don't know if he used any eligibility that first year, because he would still have his COVID year. So that's going to be interesting. I don't know if Levi Williams will stick around. There's some rumblings that he might be looking to pursue other opportunities. Because he's not been named the starter, but he's got a, there's some relationships there that would could keep him there at Utah State. If I'm Cooper Legault, I'm probably hitting the portal, but that quarterback room could dry up really quick. And it's always really hard to recruit a quarterback when you give the job to a true freshman and you realize, well, geesh, he's the guy and he's got a ton of eligibility. Is that somewhere where I really want to go? So, yeah, I mean, there's, you know, that could be difficult, but yeah, if Cooper, I'll check into that. I'll have an answer for you on Monday as to the eligibility of next year for Cooper Legault. But again, Cooper's a really good kid, and I know you've fallen in love with him. You know his family really well. Wrestling state champ, track and field state champ. He's just a really good kid, but just didn't quite make the progress that he needed to going into this season.
So, can imagine being Levi Williams, Lloyd. Like, you leave Wyoming, you've got a starting gig, and you leave, and now you can't even get on the field before a kid that just stepped off a high school field.
College football is a cruel, cruel world. That's a bummer deal. But you know what? If you're an Aggie fan, you know, when you see a young kid like this come in and step in, and you see all of a sudden you see how bright your future can be, and that's got to be, you know, somebody that's young, that obviously you're going to have some bumps and bruises, but I saw, you know, watching some of his play, he had a definite different presence back there than Cooper Legault.
Well, the game of the night last night, Colorado was, I mean, they were dead. They were done. Down 11 late. Dallin Holker with a beautiful catch, former Cougar, sneaks into the end zone. It's 28-17. Shadur Sanders is doing everything he can, but Colorado State's just bullying that team. And they go down, they kick a field goal. Colorado State decides not to go for it on a 4th-and-2. Beautiful punt, pins him at the 2-yard line. Shadur Sanders has just over 2 minutes to go the length of the field, needs a touchdown, needs a 2-point conversion. And Lloyd, he does just that. He leads him right down the field. They get the touchdown, the 2-point conversion, double overtime. Not a fan of the call, although it's the right call. I mean, letter of the law, I get it, but it backs Colorado State up. They're unable to get the touchdown to send it to a triple overtime, and Colorado pulls off the miracle as the dream season for Deion Sanders continues on. And it wasn't without a lot of heartburn in this one. And props to Colorado State. They fought like crazy, but at the end, it was Coach Prime getting his W.
Well, I just want to see the on-field camera of those two meeting in the middle of the field. I saw later in the evening yesterday that he told the camera crews, get yourself ready for this handshake. So have you seen or heard anything? I'll have to jump on.
I watched it. It seemed... It didn't seem overly confrontational. It was funny because Shadur, I don't know if he wanted to get camera time or what, because he was right there. He made his way next to Deion as he went to Coach Norvell, and Norvell reached in. It looked like Norvell was doing more talking than Deion was. But overall, I don't know. Lloyd, did you watch it? It didn't seem overly confrontational to me. Yeah. And I think the way the game played out,
so.
Had it been a 62-3 game like we all thought it was going to be, it might have taken on a different tone. But I think deep down, Deion knew they may have gotten away with one, so he was a little bit more conciliatory than he would have been otherwise.
I'll tell you what, Colorado State, they had a lot of heart in that game. And it's not to say Colorado didn't either, but there was something extra with every one of their hits. I mean, you saw that hit on Travis Hunter that was, you know, that was one of those shots that was put on him. And by the way, he ended up having to go to the hospital. Not sure what his status is, but it was one of those shots where it was just a sure, it was a little bit, you know, maybe it was a little bit late, but it was one of those shots to say, to let them know, hey, I'm going to be here all night long and you better have your head on a swivel because I'm going to put a pop on you. And that's exactly what Colorado State was, extremely physical in that game.
Yeah.
Like they were, I felt like they were the more physical team.
They were until they kind of called the dogs off. They didn't blitz as much. They didn't try to get after Shadur. They let him sit in the pocket, especially on that long drive. And man, you know, and
Scotty, what is the prevent? What does the prevent prevent you from doing?
Getting a W. And
right.
But I tell you what, though, man, Shadur Sanders, like, you want to not like the kid, which isn't fair. I mean, you shouldn't say that. But like deep down, I think a lot of us are kind of rooting against Colorado because they put themselves out there. But I'm telling you, man, this kid is just phenomenal. And he took nasty hits. That shot he took from Kamara that they threw the flag on, when he pile-drived him into the ground and just put him right on top of his shoulder. I'm thinking that sucker's separated. And he gets up and says, all right, let's go. And it's just like, wow.
Ice in his veins.
This kid is tough. He's got ice in his veins. He's the real deal. And he's... As you know, Hans, you talk to him. I mean, the dude's arrogant, but he backs it up, and good for him.
And there's a difference between a Colorado State defense and, like, say, a Utah defense. And there's other, you know, there's other defenses in the Pac-12. I'm eager to see, you know, like Oregon State. Do they have Oregon State? I don't even remember. Anyways, they do have Oregon State, right?
Lloyd, I'm looking at it. They've already played them twice. Utah. No, I'm just joking.
Not Utah. No, Colorado.
Oh, I don't.
Anyways, I'm just pointing out there's a better defense that's going to be out there that it's not going to be quite that easy.
They do not. Oh, yeah, they do. November 4th. They've got Oregon State on.
Do they? Okay. Yeah. There you go.
Yep.
I'm glad they don't play in three times.
all right. Well, that wraps it up for us. Gentlemen, enjoy your Sunday. Hands, get home safe. I got a question, though. You sent out the video about the barbecue. Ribs look pretty good, but what really stood out to me was that beef rib. How was the beef rib?
Best thing I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, nothing beats a good beef rib, that's for sure. It looked fantastic.
Did Ravel feed that to you?
Lloyd, what are you doing?
No, what?
Hit the car crash, Scotty.
Nope.
There you go.
Whatever.
You want another?
No.
Then that's 10 more.
No, I'm going to go back to bed. Let's wrap this thing.
No, that beef rib looked great. Did you eat all of that, or was that shared among the crew?
I ate it.
Oh, a car crash on that, Scotty.
No, that's legit.
We're all still punchy.
All right.
That was a long game.
Well, Sounds good, gentlemen. We'll kick off the show tomorrow at noon. Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, Lloyd Cole. It's your Morning After podcast. We do ask that you not only listen, and thank you for listening if you've made it this far. Second of all, we ask that you tell a friend. And then third, whether you're using iTunes, Spotify, whatever, please subscribe, leave a rating, maybe even a comment, as long as it's nice, because, you know, we're sensitive about that stuff. So we would appreciate all the support you can, because it helps keep us employed. It's the Morning After podcast. Hans, Scotty, and Lloyd. This is 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone.
It's finally time to say goodbye to the snow and hello to spring, and right now is the best time to spring into adventure in an RV from a Motorsportsland RV center. Through this week, come check out Motorsportsland's season kickoff event and find the RV you've been dreaming of. Save thousands and even tens of thousands off MSRP and find your next adventure at a Motorsportsland RV center today.
Let Motorsportsland help you get away.
Motorsportsland.com.